Hey there, you are tuned in to Aloud, a podcast hosted by Brendan Murtha and myself, Jess Jones. In this episode, we interview Umi from Umi Feeds. We talk a lot about food, homelessness, community, and what we can do to improve the spaces that we live in. Thanks for listening. Umi, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes. Hi, my name is Umi. I am the founder and executive director of Umi Feeds, a nonprofit based here in Atlanta.
All right. So, Umi, can you tell us about Umi Feeds? Like, what kind of work do y'all do? Who do you serve?
Okay, so Umi Feeds is, as I said, it's a food rescue nonprofit. We're dedicated to serving the hungry and homeless, healthy and nutritious meals from food that is rescued and redistributed to those who are hungry, homeless, and food insecure. So we just take food that other people consider trash for whatever reason, and we serve it to those who are in need. And started in 2015, and we've been going strong ever since. When I started, I didn't even know what food rescue was. I didn't even know, I've never heard of any such thing. I was at an event, I was volunteering with the city of Atlanta, saw some excess food, they were throwing it away because the event had come to an end. And I was like, can I take this food and give it to some folks? And I know some people, right around the way that would use it, that would be thankful for it. And they said, yeah, and from that point on, like Umi Feeds was born in that moment. And my name is Erica actually, right? But I go by Umi, and Umi means mother, servant, nurturer, all those things that kind of really encompass Umi Feeds anyway. And it's actually a song for Mos Def. Song is called Umi Says, and it's one of my favorite songs. And so, I'm still, in the hip hop age. And so, anything like that, I just love. And so with that, when I went out in October 2015, just to kind of show people, when I went out, I was thinking it was going to be a different situation. And what it ended up being was something totally different. And also that first time when I went out, I learned amongst people that are homeless are also people that are homeless and vegetarian. Mm-hmm. Someone was like, is there a veggie pinwheel there? Cause I had pinwheels, right? That was the leftover food. And I was like, goodness, I'm pescatarian. I was probably vegetarian at that time. I didn't even think about that. I just had the food. And so, just things to consider, like, people have all different types of situations going on out there that you don't expect, or plan for all the time,
Mm-hmm. So you were talking about what you expected and like how there was like some things that were different. Was there anything else aside from maybe like the certain dietary restrictions of people?
Well, in terms of the guy being vegetarian, are you saying in that regards, right? Right. So say it again.
Oh, I'm thinking in regards to maybe just expectations or an idea you had of like what people's needs were or who even needed help and how that may have shifted in your work.
So when I went out there, I really honestly didn't have any idea or anything. I was literally just like, I don't want to say mindless because there is some intention upon asking for food that would have been thrown away to give it to folks. But when I went out there, I had no idea. I have done it before. I volunteered when I was a teenager in New York with my aunt, and she also goes by Umi, and she fed the homeless as well. And so I had, a gauge. Like I've done stuff like this before, but it was just different. So when I went out there, and you get to see like most people eat meat, most people want this, most people want that, and a lot of people, if you give them drinks, they might want water instead of the drink. I've learned over time some people. Don't necessarily want, like, if you make a turkey and cheese sandwich, it's high in sodium. A lot of people have different diseases and things going on, illnesses that prevent them from being able to eat stuff like that because it's high in salt. And so, things that you learn along the way, like, a lot of folks, some of the folks out there don't have teeth. So like biting into an apple, a nice crisp apple can be a challenge for some folks. You know? So you gotta make sure that certain things are cut up and easily to digest if they don't have any teeth to chew it with. So, you know, like things like that. Or if they do have teeth, they haven't been to the dentist, like your teeth might be wobbly and they can't necessarily bite. And so you try to have like soft fruit, you're gonna have bananas or oranges or something like that. And you know, if you do have an apple, maybe cut it up, you know. Those are things I've learned over time, you know, that I didn't know starting out, you know.
Right. Umi Feeds obviously is, you use the word food rescue a lot, and you talk now about how kind of food waste gets kind of taken back into the system to provide for those in need. Can you describe a little bit now in kind of the Umi Feeds project, where what the sources of the food are and how you kind of take those resources and funnel them back in to hungry mouths?
So food resources is really anywhere food is produced. So grocery store, private events. And let's say you had for this event, you and Jess had some food amongst each other and you brought too much. I take that. I've taken food from conferences, from dinners, from, you know, private dinners. I've taken food from grocery stores, restaurants, warehouses, any farms, gardens, anywhere where there is food, there is going to probably be some waste. And we don't intend on it, we don't expect to waste, but it happens. And the biggest producers of food waste are us. You know, we buy food that we don't always eat before the food even gets to the grocery store. A quarter of it is going to be wasted, you know, before we even see it. And then if it goes, for example, to the farmers market and it doesn't look as good, people are going to less likely pick the one that doesn't look as great. And so, you know, food is wasted that way. So all of those channels, the groceries, the wholesalers, the distributors, you know, all of those are food sources for me. If there's an event, if there's anything, if you have anything on, I've gotten food from a bar mitzvah, you know, like whole pans that they didn't use, you know, like really everyone comes into contact with food and people waste even they don't intend on wasting. Like everything you buy from the grocery store, you don't consume, you know? So.
Have you found the response to this program from some of these providers? Let's say a supermarket, for instance. Are they more than happy to give up kind of that wasted food, or do they sort of see that as a threat to their bottom line? What kind of dialogue goes on between your program and food providers to kind of ensure that this food gets to where it needs to go?
So there, with most places, there's programs put into place. So there's like food waste programs. There's, you know, where they know they throw out food. Now, some places, like for example, as a private citizen going into Kroger, at the end of the day, like if you go into the deli section, they have to mark it down first. And if it doesn't go at a certain point, then they toss that food right in front. I've gone in and I've just seen some an employee with the big garbage can just tossing that stuff, right? I can't go in there directly like that and say, you know, hey, I'd like to take your food waste. There's programs that they have, like I think Kroger has Zero Hunger and Zero Hunger, something like that. And most grocery stores have a program, some of them have a program actually, where they donate to nonprofits, churches, and food banks. So there is something in place for folks like me, food banks, and other places to get the food that they don't sell, whether the can is dented or the food is just expiring, you know, soon, or you know, different all kinds of reasons why grocery stores and food places like that end up with stuff. So there's definitely programs in place, and a lot of times they are stores are already taken up. So like I was calling some store, she was like, you might want to catch a store that hadn't opened yet. So if there's a new grocery store coming in your area, reach out to them and try to see if you can pick up their food waste, because someone is going to get on it, you know, like super fast. So
Rumi, I'm curious about where you tend to distribute your food, because the last time that I saw you was at that demonstration in front of the Capitol. Right. And that, first of all, was so nice to see you out there doing your thing.
Yeah, and nice to see you too, doing your thing.
So I was wondering, where else do you tend to distribute?
So primarily in Atlanta. I'm primarily in the city of Atlanta because it seems like the need is greatest there. That's where it's, you know, the high concentration of need there. You have a lot of homeless folks, and then you have a lot of low income housing within the city limits. So most of the work that I'm doing is in the downtownish area, because most of the homeless folks that I see are in town. You know, they're in places that you don't see, they're on the highway, they're all along the way. So most of the work that I do is, right in town. I have been in like DeKalb County, in Fulton County, and I don't think I've ever done anything in Cobb. But the need is all over. The need is all over the state, but mainly I work with Metro Atlanta.
I was wondering if there was like difficulties or differences in dealing with the more visible homelessness that we may see downtown, where people are literally, you know, on the side of the road panhandling, versus dealing with people who you may not know are homeless just by looking at them, right? Or maybe people who even do have homes but are food insecure. And I was wondering about your approach to both of those things.
You said, is there a difference?
Yeah, as far as like being able to reach out to them and maybe their needs as well.
Yeah, well, the ones that are on the street are more visible. So you know where they are. You know what their need is upon seeing them. Somebody who's sleeping in their car, you may not know that they're sleeping in their car because they may have a job and still be sleeping in their car. Even somebody that might be panhandling on the street may have a job. Like, you know, I've learned that coming from New York, I don't know where you guys are from, if you're not from here, but like in New York, at least they used to call them like homeless people was like bums, you know, a lot of people call them bums. And I've learned that a lot of homeless people are not bums. You know, I never really thought that anyway, but that was just the word that they used for them. Right. And so you learn that they're not bums. Some of them have jobs. Some of them may be sleeping on the street, but have employment. Some of them are hiding in their cars, because you won't know if somebody's in a car that they're homeless unless you see like maybe they have a ton of stuff in their car, and their car is like, you know, super packed, and you might get an idea like, hey. But like, so they can be invisible. Then you have some people like one of our stops when we serving the homeless, I drive around the city, and one of our stops is no one would ever know because they are not visible to folks. They are in tunnels. They are by the trains. Like I even went to an event, Village Market ATL, and I had went in the wrong door or something, like went the wrong way. And then it led me to like the train station by the freight depot downtown off of MLK. And I saw like people were sleeping by the trains, and I'm like, oh my, I was just like, you know, in my arrogance, I was just like, why would anybody want to sleep near the train? It's so loud. You can't even rest, you know? But then it's just like, it's a way to be hidden, you know? Like, you don't want everybody to always know this, what the situation is, because people tend to judge when they see you. They think, you know, the worst of you, they think you're on drugs. And everybody that's homeless is not on drugs. Everybody that's homeless aren't thieves. Everyone who's homeless doesn't always have mental issues. I remember serving at Hurt Park one time, and a guy told me, I had a barber out there, and they were giving out free haircuts. And he said, you know, I can't get any resources. I'm not mentally unstable, and I'm not on drugs, but I have a hard time getting the things that I need, you know? And he was like, there's no program for people who just kind of falling on necessarily hard times in terms of like immediate housing or something. Like you have a better chance of getting housing if you was on drugs, or if you're coming, you know, like in a rehab program, or you're coming from out of jail. But if you haven't had all of those things, you know, it makes it difficult. Also, everybody who, just because you're homeless doesn't mean you're a criminal. It could be you had a fire and you don't have anybody here. You know, you don't have anybody else to turn to. You know, maybe you don't want to stay in a shelter. A lot of homeless folks, they don't want to stay in a shelter. It's abuse there, bed bugs there. There's all kinds of reasons people could be sleeping on the street. They might feel safer. Like, you have chronic homelessness where people feel more comfortable in an environment that they know. You know, like, I had to think about it. If it was me, what would I prefer? And I mean, growing up in a home, I would prefer the shelter of, I mean, I would prefer shelter, right? I would prefer an enclosed place. But if I had to be on the street, I would prefer to be visible on the street so that people can see me, because that is how they get served and how they get help, how they get food. Because if nobody sees you, they don't even know that you exist to give you anything, whether it's a hygiene bag or a blanket or anything to eat. Like, I was serving some folks on Tuesday, and like, I pulled up and this guy has like 4 containers, you know? And I remember a time when I used to, if I saw somebody with multiple containers or just even one, I was not going to serve them, because I'm like, you got food already, you know? But then I changed that perspective. Like, listen, this, I don't know when your next meal is. And if you're homeless, you probably don't know when your next meal is. And so if you have another meal, if you have a meal already, I'm going to still go ahead and give you a meal, because, you know, you're going to need it. You might be hungry. You know, men, most of the homeless folks that are out there are Black men. And so men typically have like a large appetite. So we just try to make sure that, you know, I'm providing enough food that people will be, you know, fed sufficiently, that they won't still be hungry after they have left, you know, Umi feeds, you know, if I prepared. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You brought up how within the homeless population, there's kind of a difference of opinion or strategy, you could say, where some people kind of want to be visible because that's how you get help, and some people kind of want to hide away from the public gaze out of maybe some sense of pride or shame or whatever it may be. Do you find, in kind of interacting with these two different populations, obviously there's obviously many divergences within the population, but of those two specifically, that their relationship to kind of getting leftover food is different? Is there a shame there that you kind of hear expressed from some people, or is it always kind of just a pure process of being thankful for it?
Oh, completely, completely thankful. 99% of the time. There are some, we have been told no, because they like, because I'm assuming, because they're visible, that people are always donating food, and, you know, to those that they see. And so I've only had somebody turn me down because they already like, man, he's like, I just ate, I don't want to be greedy, you know what I'm saying? Like, so you'll have that, but generally they don't know that the food is food waste. Okay. They just see food and they generally take it. I think in terms of even someone having that attitude, most folks think I cooked it. When I pull up, they think I made it. And I always have to tell people, like, I wish I did make it, but I didn't. It's food that would have been thrown away. And most people have no problem with that, because when you look at the food, nothing about it looks thrown away, because you can have food that's food waste that has never been opened. So, like, it's not like someone bit it and then here is the bitten sandwich. It's a completely whole food made, possibly never touched, or part of the pan was touched, you know, but not, you know, doesn't, no one has any aversion to the fact that it was somewhere else first, you know.
As far as, oh, sorry, go on, Brendan.
No, go ahead, Jess.
I was going to ask you, as far as homelessness in the U.S., but, you know, specifically in Atlanta, what sort of avenues do you think we can do to address it? Because here in Atlanta, like, so many different shelters have been shut down over the years. And I'm wondering where you see as being places people can pour their help.
I would say to folks like Umi Feeds, right? People who's actually on the ground. And then to maybe some of the grassroots, because there are so many, we know the big, there's big organizations like Salvation Army and Goodwill and Atlanta Community Food Bank, but there are a lot of other small organizations that are doing things that don't have the funding, but have the heart and the passion to help the folks that need that help. You know, they need the volunteers, they need the funding, they need the resources, they need the connections. Like, those are the places they need someone to champion behind them, because it's not like the work that they're doing is, you know, irrelevant. It's just not as noticed because it's not coming from a big name. You know, like, a lot of people don't know who Umi Feeds is at all. But if I go on the street, I saw this guy that I hadn't seen in like 2 to 3 years, and he had did a video for me. I had a dinner at Safe House, one of the places, right, that I partnered with, and I hadn't seen him in so long. And so I didn't even see him in the parking lot. I was loading my car or unloading my car, and I was getting ready to get in, and he said, "Hey." And so I turned around, I see him, and he's like in a one of those I don't even know, like a wheelchair, but it was like you push this guy, a walker or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so he was like, you know, he's talking to me, and I'm like, does he remember me? Because I certainly remember him. You know, he did a video for me, and he's like, yeah, I remember you, you know? And so you have those imprints in relationships with folks because you're out there. And so there's a lot of shelters that have closed, and there's a lot of resources that have closed. And now with COVID, makes it even more difficult. So to kind of help folks and testing and all the other kind of stuff. So it just makes it difficult. I don't always know if all the resources that are available, and people ask me, and I'm like, I really don't know. There's so many, I imagine there's a lot of resources here, but just a lot of that you don't know about, but doesn't mean that they don't exist just because I don't know. I don't always know. I don't know where folks can go because then you have situations when people go places, they can even sometimes be separated. You know, if you have a family of, let's say, 4, a family of 3, and you have a son, he's 18, they're not going to place you all together because he's 18 or he's 17 and he's considered an adult now. And so he has to go someplace else because they don't want him, you know. So it makes it really difficult for people. I just know My Sister's Keeper, I know Atlanta Union Mission, I know Safe House, but even Safe House, they do emergency housing. So when the temperature reaches, I think, 37 or 38, they allow people to come inside so that you don't freeze. And so I know they do emergency housing. Then there's a place in Adamsville, the Adamsville Y, I believe, does emergency housing. But I don't know where folks can go. The Salvation Army, the gentleman told me, he was like, you pay $25 a day. I think he said he just paid $300 for the month to stay there. And I'm like, $300, that's a lot of money when you are homeless. But, you know, some homeless folks get disability and they get SSI and they have their monthly resources or retirement or, you know, wherever. And they might have a place that, like Safe House, where they can collect mail and stuff like that. And so, you know, those are things that people don't think about. Like, oh, people actually, they do get checks, you know. Mm-hmm. They have resources and they use them. And some of them are veterans and all kinds of things. So there's resources in place. I don't necessarily always know of a whole lot of them. I just know so many have closed and so have the opportunities for housing. But they're working on something, from my understanding. They're working on something with the City of Atlanta, some new program that will give housing. I think they're building something or something that's already existing, turning it into shelter. So soon come.
You said earlier in talking about kind of growing up in New York and how the word bum, as it was thrown around towards homeless people, was kind of proven to be like a gross misinterpretation. Yeah. As you kind of worked with this population, what do you think are some of the kind of the greatest misconceptions that people continue to have about homelessness, maybe both in Atlanta, but also kind of the homelessness crisis in America as a whole?
They're not educated. They're lazy. They're bums. They are on drugs, they are alcoholics, they are criminals, they are mental disability, they are unemployed, they are criminals. I mean, anything that you can think of negative is placed upon someone who's sleeping outside. And sometimes it's not always the case. Sometimes, like I remember a couple of years ago, I think we had some notepads or something, some paper we were giving out. And it was a guy, he was like writing a little book, and he had theories written out. He had research, you know, because Auburn Avenue Research Library there right downtown, they allow folks to come in. So I've seen some homeless folks sitting up in the library, using the resources, not just sitting there, but actually using the resources. Some of them are very smart. Some of them are very handy, you know. So I think those are the misconceptions. Now, there are some people that are definitely on drugs, that are definitely prostituting, that are definitely drinking alcohol, who are, you know, have run into some legal issues and, you know, whatever, you know, or may even be on the run. I don't know, but I do know that it's not the case for everybody. So to give them a blanket statement, you know, would be just a misjustice to people individually, like just putting your assumptions on who you think they are based upon, even if they smell, like, you never know what's going on with folks. And that's what I've, you know, come from, because, you know, they show Atlanta on television. We see Real Housewives of Atlanta. We see all these shows about Atlanta, hip hop, Love and Hip Hop Atlanta. We see any reality show based here, and Atlanta looks so good. It looks great on television. Like, I'm like, I can't wait to get there, right? But the reality is that Atlanta is high in wealth inequality. Atlanta is high in homelessness and in unemployment. And that is not what is shown, because when you see Atlanta, when I first got here, I was like, oh, the streets are so clean and it's always, you know, it's never an issue. I don't see any homeless people living on the street like I did in New York. And if you go in certain areas of downtown, you will see all of that. You will see people just laying out during the day. But then the city, what they do is they move them during the day, like Super Bowl. They had folks go places. You know, you might have got arrested to be in jail, to be away. You might have been, they had buses, huge buses, coming to take folks to services to kind of keep them out of the city during the day so that people don't see what's really going on. There is a lot of issues economically here that happen and take place in this great old city of Atlanta. It's a great city. There's a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of startups, and a lot of great things, a lot of tech happening here, a lot of great things, a lot of great schools, colleges, universities, hospitals, all of that. But at the same time, they have high unemployment. They have high wealth inequality. As we had talked about, or I know we were talking about like suburban poverty. You had asked me, I saw something about suburban poverty. It's like a real thing, because so many people are working and underemployed. Even when they are working, that the need is still there for them, even with the job. You know, the education system is not the greatest. If you're in public education, you have APS with their issues in terms of testing and stuff like that. And why do you think they have to do those things? So they can get the funding. Because if your school tests poorly, you are not going to get the funding that is necessary to help kids do better. And so many kids are in private school, but it's like you have an umbrella over them, but the other kids are uncovered, and that's the public school systems. You know what I'm saying? So there's a lot of great public schools here. My kids are in public schools, and they were in great, one of them is still in public school, and she's in a great public school. But it's, you know, I've learned over time, just being a parent, that the best schools have parent involvement. That's what makes the school great, because when a parent is involved in the child's schooling and education, then they're likely to be involved in other things. And then in some areas, like parents, not that they don't want to be involved, but they don't have the time, because I'm working two jobs. Where am I going to be able to come to your school? When am I going to be able to sit in a classroom and do anything? You know, I don't have time for that because I'm working. And even if you're an entrepreneur, like, you may not even have time, because like I'm trying to survive, you know. So it's a lot here, you know. But it's a great city, but it has, you know, every great city has its complications too, like highs and lows.
Definitely. And all of those that you talked about, like education, inequality, lack of parental involvement, these are all things that contribute to homelessness. So if we were to go and try and prevent homelessness or like nip it at the root, I suppose we'd have to get it from all of these angles.
Yeah, because I know it's, I mean, everybody, COVID has exposed so many things, and people have lost their jobs, you know, lost their livelihoods. I've seen restaurants that have been standing for 30 years, 30 plus years, shutter, you know? So if that was your business and now you have no job because you're not able to pay anybody, we just in July, they had everybody who was getting the help to support with the rent and not being able to pay their rent, and they were being supported by the city or whoever, like no, there's going to be no evictions, like that ended in July. So now what, you know, you're even people who are in homes, renting homes, mortgages, where they, that 3 months that they coasted you, now you got to pay all of that at once. They don't want it at the end. They want it now. Plus your next month rent. Like, okay, but if I just lost my job or I had a reduction, like maybe I still have my job, but no bonuses is coming, you know, no increase, no, you know, my hours have been cut and I'm still supposed to come up with 3 months of rent. Like, from where are we really serious? And then they stopped the extra $600 that people were getting, you know, like that made a world of a difference. So there's going to be another wave of homelessness coming when people, when they see that people are not going to be able to afford to maintain the lifestyle that they had prior to COVID. So it's going to be a whole new wave. It's going to be a lot more people sleeping in their cars. They're going to be people, because there's two types of homelessness, at least, which is sheltered and unsheltered. Sheltered is you could be couch surfing. You could be staying with a friend, staying with a cousin, staying with an aunt. It's not your house, right? So technically you don't have a place to live. You're staying with people. And then there's the unsheltered, which are those who are living on the streets, you know? Even with the shelter, you could be in the shelter. So they consider that shelter. But those who are living on the streets, like it's tough. It's so tough out here. And just the other last month, I learned of a woman who I had just served her like the month prior, a couple of weeks prior, not even a month, probably like two weeks prior. Someone went in her tent and just shot her in the head 3 to 4 times, dead. You know, walked out, nothing, no regard for life, no regard for anything, decency, you know. So it's a lot of issues, you know, around, and you know, something needs to be done fast.
Looking on the OMI Feed website, some of the statistics you display there, you also talk about food beyond homelessness, food insecurity, and how 16% of households in the South are what you could call food insecure. Can you talk a little bit about what food insecurity looks like in kind of 21st century America, and how OMI Feeds goes about addressing it?
So how we address food insecurity is just not always knowing where your food is going to come from. You know, like I know when I come home, I have food here and I have food sources and I have grocery stores that are close to me. So I know that I have something to eat. I make enough money where I can get healthy foods at any corner. I can go left or right and there's a grocery store in both locations. I can go in the middle and there's a grocery store. In food insecure communities, which are usually low income communities, those resources aren't there. They may not know where their food is going to come from. They're dependent upon, let's see, social services to help support that, right? And so they don't have all the resources to be able to feed their household. And so they rely on places like the Atlanta Community Food Bank or a food bank if you're not in Atlanta. You rely on the food bank, you rely on pantries, you rely on different sources to be able to get your food. And so I have been a source for some who have needed the food. And the USDA has a program as a result of COVID. It's a food box program. So every Thursday, for example, I am giving out boxes. Other organizations are doing the same thing. Groups are doing the same thing, giving out boxes. Inside the box is fresh produce from, you know, straight from the farm. It is, and it's good stuff. It's stuff that, you know, can sustain you. There's no meat in there, most of the packages, but, you know, it's onions, it's oranges, it's apples. There's some zucchini, squash. I just got one yesterday for myself. Like, cause I was like, oh, there's some fruit. I can juice this thing. You know what I'm saying? I can juice these carrots, this cucumbers and make some cucumber lemonade. But, you know, for some people depend on it. Thankfully, I don't depend on it, but it's nice to have, you know, because everybody needs food. Like some people say, oh, give it to those who, you know, need it more than I do. Like everybody needs to eat. You know, I think releasing the shame around taking food from a place other than the grocery store needs to be, in a farmer's market, needs to be, take that all away. Like if that's my resource, and I have food to give, then you shouldn't feel bad for taking it, you know? And yeah, it's free and it's healthy stuff.
That makes me think to just this culture we live in, you know, at least the dominant culture of, oh, you have to be self-sufficient. You don't want to ask for anything.
Right.
And there's always somebody who has it worse than you. So, like, I feel like we really tend to minimize our problems with regards to that.
Yeah. And that's a culture that's really, I don't even know where that, people need to get over that, because you said you're starving and there's a resource here that can help you, but you don't want to take it. Like, and you see that sometimes, and most of the times, even like I've had people with, you know, advanced degrees come in and get some food from me out of my car. Like, you got to release the shame, the pride, and accepting food, because I try to, my slogan is like spreading love through food. So there's no shame for me to give to you. There should be no shame for you to get it from me, because I feel like I'm treating everybody as their family and, you know, giving a loving vibe. I'm not looking at you sideways. There's sometimes a little form that you have to fill out, but it's just data. It's just to collect data to see where's the need, what community needs it more. Are there a lot of veterans out here? Are there a lot of LGBTQ plus out here? Are there a lot of elders? You know, who is getting the food? So I think for people to, most people are grateful, and there are some that have a stigma about receiving it, but I think it shouldn't be. Like, everybody needs resources. Everybody, I have something that everybody needs, which is food. Everybody, I take some of the food, you know what I mean? Like, and I have no problem taking it, because it's healthy food. It's straight from the garden. Sometimes there'd be some organic stuff in there. Like one time we had some ginger. I was so excited. I was like, ginger. At the time of a pandemic when we need to boost our immune systems, we got ginger, we got oranges, we got lemon, we got lime, we got carrots. We got all these things that are good for people. Just, you know, and people were coming to get it. That thing was gone in an hour. So some folks have shame and you know, and that's unfortunate. And then others, listen, I'm gonna come here. I had a well-known rapper coming to get some of that food, and not because he had the need, but because he was like, listen, I'm gonna come get this stuff. You have good stuff and I like what you have, and I'm gonna come and get it. And he came in, him and his wife. So, and they helped, and they don't just take, like, people help and support in any kind of way. I help you unload, I help you put it in the car, I help you, you know, do whatever you need. So it's like, it's I wanted to have like a community feel, like, you know, you can create the environments that you want to live in, right? So even where I live, right, where the need is not great here, right? But I put out, when I have extra, I have surplus, I put it right in front of my house. I put a table, I put my little Umi Feeds tablecloth so they can see. I leave a card if they have any questions, and I put the food out there, and they take that food. And these people, this is a neighborhood where there's at least 2 and 3 cars in every driveway. So These folks don't need it, but everybody needs to eat, right? And there should be no shame around eating because you can create community through food. So take the food. That's what these farmers markets are, these farms are for, these gardens are for people to have, to people to, for people to use and eat and consume. And so I think if you look at it in a community sense, that's my offering as a community steward. Here's the food, you know?
Beautiful. As a community steward, that really stands out to me.
Yeah. It's true. We all stewards of the community. What's your offering? This is my offering. I want to have some food. I'm going to feed a little bit of everybody. I'm going to feed some of the protesters. I'm going to feed the homeless folks. And they all going to get the same food, you know, and enjoy it the same way, you know?
Yeah, there's definitely a unifying aspect to that.
Yeah.
You talk about how the term spreading love through food is something that you definitely drive home as a message here. Can you talk about how you kind of came personally to that realization that this was a way to kind of be a community steward? Like, what was your relationship with food like growing up, and how did you kind of decide that this was the message that you were going to kind of work towards professionally, and as a move from New York to Atlanta, or where in your story did this term kind of arise?
I mean, if you look at any community, right, it's a member of the human community, the community at large, right? Everybody surrounds themselves with food. If you go in the kitchen, in any household, in any family gathering, people are gathered in the kitchen. Now, I know in Black community, we are serious about our food. We are so serious. And many of events, I can have a cookout in the backyard, but everybody's going to be in the kitchen, right? Because that's just a gathering space. And I remember eating one time, and I don't know if this lady said to me, she said, you know, like, never eat alone. You should always eat with people. And I was like, dad, I never really thought about that. But that's true. Like, eat with folks. Fellowship. That's where you fellowship. That's where the real church is at, is when you're eating a meal and you're actually breaking bread together and enjoying a meal. I'm a foodie, or I'm a Taurus. I'm a Taurus woman. I love me some food. I'm in the right field. I love to eat. I love food. I have a ton of cookbooks. I'm on Pinterest board. I got like probably so many different boards, you know, on food. And then also food is healing, you know, like we heal through food. That's how we get well. That's how we get sick also, but it's how we get well. It's how we love up on each other. When your baby is crying, you start from the beginning. When your baby is crying, what you do? You feed the baby, right? And baby calms down, baby's happy, everybody's good, and baby falls asleep eventually. You know what I'm saying? Like, food is have served as a plate, as a source of, you know, gratitude, sorrow. When there's funerals, we bring food to comfort. You know, so food is an important part of our lives. It's just not sustenance that we eat, but it's like, it is truly how we spread love through food. If I'm gonna come, I'm gonna bring you a food offering. You know, my neighbors, when I had the market, I call it the Sewanee curbside market, right? When I did that offering, they came across the street. Now I've been here for a whole year, and they have never said anything to me ever, right? But when I put that market outside and free to take, they came and gave me a whole tray of peaches, you know what I'm saying, as a offering to say thank you for doing that for us, you know what I'm saying? So we communicate through food, you know, it's food is everything. So it came quite naturally that I would be doing this. I didn't plan on doing this. Like I said, I have a marketing degree. Like I'm a creative. I'm also a photographer. You know what I'm saying? So I never imagined that I would be dealing with food in this capacity at all. I'm a tomboy, you know, ish, right? And so, but I'm also like, I'm not afraid to be in places and spaces that might feel uncomfortable. You know, when you're serving the homeless, you are in places and spaces that are very uncomfortable. And I remember someone one time saying they was calling me bougie, right? And I'm like, listen, Bougie people don't do this work. Bougie people write checks, okay? They ain't out there stepping in puddles of urine and seeing people in compromising positions and dealing, you know, crazy type folks sometimes, situations, you know, tunnels where people, it was, you see the most craziest stuff doing this work. I've seen some crazy things. And so it's just, I think, you know, just to bring it all home, like you just gotta really have a love for people, which I do. I love people. I love, as much as I love food, I love people. I love engaging people, having different conversations, dialogue, you know, what you thinking about, what you doing, what you, I met some young boys. I was so impressed with them yesterday at the mobile market. They came down and volunteered at 18 years old. You know, I was 18. I might have been doing some stuff like that, but I wasn't like the normal kid, you know? So I, when I see you, Jess, I'm way older than you, right? Old enough to probably be your mom. I'd be so impressed. Like, even with you, Brendan, you look like you're a little bit young, right? I'm so impressed with you young guys doing your thing, like, you know, in the garden and stuff. And I took some pictures. I got some pictures of you, Jess, in the garden. And I'm just like, that is just the coolest thing. Protesting, just doing it, just as a somebody who, I didn't protest when I was younger. I don't feel like there was anything, well, maybe there was people protesting. There were certainly things to protest about. I was going to say it wasn't anything to protest about, but there was. But I wasn't out there. I wasn't active. I just got into gardening, like, when you saw me, you know, in the garden. And so it's so impressive to see young people out there, you know, caring about the land enough and the people enough to lend a hand and with anything that, you know, any expertise, any knowledge, you know, any experience. Like I have a garden day tomorrow and the lady's coming. She's like, you know, what do you need? And I'm just like, can, you know, some seedlings or something like that you have? She's like, anything else? And I'm like, really? I'm like, I need a lawnmower. I need somebody to help mow this lawn. So I went after that because I was like, she's probably talking about on this level. And then she's like, anything else? She's like, because I have tools. And I was like, oh, tools. Yeah, we need a lawnmower. Can you come out? And she was like, oh yeah. She's like, I bring my equipment. And so, you know, you just be thankful because I think when like the universe conspires, so because I'm doing this, I'm putting my foot forward, people have stepped up in ways that are unimaginable to help and support the mission because we all know that food insecurity, hunger, homelessness is a real issue. And if someone is doing it, maybe I don't have the time to do it. I'm going to support you. I'm going to give you the resources that you need. Here's a financial donation to support because I don't have the time. Or maybe I don't want to get out there. You know, maybe I do have the time, but that's not what I want to do. And so people support in so many ways. And I'm so thankful for, you know, all of the support that people have given, whether it's even been sharing Umi Feeds with someone else and telling them about it or coming out to volunteer or doing anything. Just super thankful for it all, you know?
Beautiful. Thank you so much for those kind words. And Umi, people like you are so inspirational. I mean, I wouldn't have been at that garden if you weren't one of the founding members of it. Right. And wow. If they hadn't even been there in the first place. So I feel so inspired. And even your language, when you talk about leaving the food in front of your house as an offering, mm-hmm. you know, that harkens back, that touches on what I would characterize as almost a spiritual connection with the people around us. Right. This cultural thing, something that goes deeper than just giving or taking, but sharing.
Sharing. Yeah. Right.
I think that's beautiful. And with that in mind, I'm wondering what language or culture Umi, the name, comes from. You mentioned some of its meanings earlier.
Yeah, so Umi is actually means mother, right? So if you're a Muslim and you call your mom Umi, right? Because that's what it means, right? But it also means servant. It means nurturer, you know, someone who really just takes care of. And so I feel like the name is perfect for me, for what I'm doing, for the mission. because it encompasses all of those things. I wish I had on my UMI t-shirt. I have an UMI definition t-shirt. I don't have it on today, but it encompasses all of those things. And people are always so curious as what UMI means and stuff. And I would consider myself like a spiritual person. You know, I'm not super religious at all, but I believe in like energy and having good energy and even so much that when you are cooking, that if like, I remember learning this, that if you're angry, you shouldn't cook, right? Because then that energy goes into the food. So when I'm serving folks in any capacity, if I'm not in a good headspace, I do not do it. I do not do it. Or I don't put myself in those environments. Like someone is calling me with some stuff, or I know like this person is, you know, has some tendencies in a different direction. I'm not accepting that call, because you have got to be mindful when you are touching stuff, like even gardening. If you have some anger and some feelings and some things going on, it's not good for you to plant, you know, because now you're going to be growing that stuff and other people are going to eat it, and you know, just so you just want to always, you know, be mindful and just, you know, spread love through food however you can, you know, however you can. You can pay for or buy somebody a meal, like, you know, doesn't have to, what people can do doesn't always have to be like so sophisticated to where you can't get started, but just simple things like buy an apple for somebody, buy a banana for somebody and just place it somewhere, say free banana, you know, something simple. I saw someone do that in Asheville. I was in Asheville and they left a container and it was closed, so, you know, no animals, no insects can get into it, and it said free food. Just take it. And I was like, oh, this is so cool. You know, like little things people can do. Everybody can do something.
So you founded or were one of the founding members of a community garden, I guess Whitehall Community Garden in Atlanta. And you've talked a bunch about how kind of sharing food and giving out food is kind of an act of community stewardship. In gardening, there's also obviously a component of stewarding the land. And it seems like in a community garden, there's kind of that cycle between community stewardship and land stewardship. And it's at the intersection that community gardening takes on a kind of like transcendental quality. So can you talk in your experience founding a community garden and now following up through the years and kind of watching how it's grown, the role that you feel like gardens can play in a community? And
gardens are, you know, gardens are like a place of healing. It's a place of meditation. It's a spiritual place. It's a place to grow food. It's a place, you know, to get your herbs. It's a place to just come and be with the land, you know, come connect with God and see his work. You know, it could be a church for some folks. It could be whatever you make the space to be. It could be home. It could be, it doesn't have to be a foreign place. Like when I was growing up, my grandmother had like a small, in the driveway, there was a small little patch of grass and she would plant in there. And that was like, it's like peace, you know, like I want to create a space where people can do yoga in the garden. We can, I have a circular, like a brick fire pit that I've made. So we can have conversations. So it's a gathering space also. It's a place to gather and just sit and just observe and listen to nature, listen to the bees. Look at, I was in there, we compost. I was in there yesterday and there's so many dragonflies. And I was like, so I was sitting in my car, I was like, oh my God, so many dragonflies, right? Because I'm still a city girl, right? I was like, what is all of this, right? And I was looking it up and it's like, you want to see dragonflies in the garden because they are there for the mosquitoes and that is helpful. So it's like its own ecosystem. So if you just observe, you can just be in the space and watch the ecosystem happening around you. You know what I'm saying? It's a place of wonder. You can just sit in there and look up at the stars, look at the trees, look at the birds. I think our first day in there, there was like a bird, some type of big bird sitting on a tree limb. You know, I'm excited about everything. I'm one of those people, right? You know, excited about everything. I was like, oh my God, it's so cool. I took a picture with my camera. It is so cool. Look at this. It's just sitting there and you just look and you just see the wonder of life happening, you know, and in a community space that all are welcome. Like, this is a space that everybody is welcome to come to. You know, it's not exclusive. There's no membership. There is a gate. But it's open to everybody. And that's the part that of community that we want to continue. So it started off, it was a lot of us. And, you know, life happens and you can't always tend to the garden, right? And so we seen, you know, sometimes decline in membership or participation. But the land and the vegetables still grow, and they're still going to do what they need to do, and they still serving this purpose. Like, currently we're growing eggplant, we're growing fruit, we have several fruit trees, we have composting, we have peppers out there, we have tomatoes, we have, you know, a lot of beautiful things growing in the garden. And it's just a cool place to be, like, especially for somebody, you know, I'm a city girl. I didn't grow up with all of these gardens around me that I was taking advantage of, you know? And now that I am hip to this, like, it's like the best place ever, you know? Like, just to come and just chill and just catch a vibe. Like, I used to love being in there with Jordan because he's such a vibe to me. You know, I would just love to be around him and his energy. And last time he was in there, I forget her name, something like that. And she was just playing some music. I forget her name, but she was playing some music. It was like, we were painting, we do art projects in there. It was just like a vibe. I love that sense of community with being in there, and you're stewarding the land, you're taking care of the land, but then we're also taking care of the people by fellowshipping in that space. So it's a nice space to be in.
The fellowship at Whitehall Community Terrace is fantastic.
Right? Oh my God.
It's so fantastic.
I just love being in there with folks, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's people of all ages.
All ages.
Races, anything.
Races, like beliefs, everything, mm-hmm. Backgrounds. People coming from here, there, but they are coming in that garden. And that point, when you come in there, everybody is one. Like, we have a unified goal, and that's the beautiful thing, is executing the goal. And then there's this quote, right, that I remember seeing, and it was by this man. I saw it somewhere. You know how sometimes you go into these rabbit holes, right? So I was in this rabbit hole one day, and I saw a quote by this man named, I was listening to a podcast from this guy named Jay Shetty, and he said something that resonated with me. So then I started to like look up some information. I found a quote by this man named Nelson Henderson, and it said, the true meaning of life is to plant trees under whose shade you do not expect to sit. And that is what we do in the garden, is I'm planting, we're planting, produce, food for people that will be for years to come, hopefully, you know what I'm saying? And I did my thing, and I, you know, eventually I'll move on or so. Mm-hmm. But it's for people for generations to come if they can maintain it, you know what I'm saying? And so everybody should be trying to do that, to make the place better for other people, even if you don't benefit directly from it, you know?
Yeah. And it seems like that kind of mentality holds through in the sharing of food as well. I guess in every mm-hmm. box of food you hand out, that's a seed in itself, as you've kind of gotten at, as people look naturally to share food, no matter how much you need it. If you always want to eat with someone as opposed to eating alone, each box right. of food that you hand out to someone in need is a seed that you're giving out, because the tree itself will be the conversation they have as they share that food with someone. It's kind of just spreads out in all directions. I think that's really phenomenal.
Yeah. It's a beautiful thing. Like, you know, we connect with food. Like, we can bond, we can laugh, we can cry, you know, we can create, you know, all of that happens through food, you know. It's food has tentacles, you know.
I like that.
Seriously, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
man, this has been so beautiful. I know we've been talking for around a little over an hour now, but I feel like that went by very quickly.
I know. This is one of my favorite things. I could talk about, you know, food all day. I love food. I love the sense of community that I have, you know, gained from it. I met some great people through Umi Feeds, through the garden. So it's one of my, it's definitely one of my passions. Like, I love engaging. I love people. I love sharing food. I love coming up with new things. Like, let me show you some books that I got, you know, looking a little bit more into, because when you are just in spaces, you know, other things start to come to you. And so I picked up some books because I was in this library, right? No, not this library. I was in a National Museum of African American History.
Got you. This is the library.
I was in a major museum, and I picked up something. Oh, I saw this quote. It always starts with something like, you got to be curious about life. And I saw this quote somewhere, and it was by this lady. I took a picture of it because I just loved what she had to say. I don't even remember the quote, but I posted it somewhere. I just can't seem to find it. And I was like, oh man, I like that. So I went and looked her up, and then it led me to this book, which has no artwork on it, but it's called what is it called? African American Food Ways, right? Mm-hmm. And it's by the lady who quote I initially saw, and it's about, you know, food ways and the ways in which food has come to us, right? Because even that has some history. And then kind of getting into this, I got this one, Farming While Black, Leah Penniman. She was here at I think maybe the AUC campus or something like that. She had a talk. But then there's another one, Vibration Cooking.
Ooh. You know,
that's a good one. Vibration Cooking. That is Verda Mae Smart Grosvenor, or the Travel Notes of a Geechee Girl, right? Because all this food comes from someplace. Then I have this one. This is a popular one, Michael Twitty, The Cooking Team. And it's about kind of like talking about slavery and the ancestors and kind of where food comes from. I have another book that I don't know. I think it's probably By My Bed. This is The Food Fix. And this is a book by Dr. Mark Hyman. And it's How to Save Our Health, Our Economy, Our Communities, and Our Planet, One Bite at a Time. Mm-hmm. So this is like, through food, we can do so much. We can heal so much, because food should be a healing source. But, you know, sometimes food and its processed food can be destructive to people in their bodies. And so, and I have another book that I'm reading. It's called Hog and Hominy. That's the one that's probably by my, next to my bed or on my bed or something like that, because I'll be like having that book everywhere, because it's, you read a book and you're like, oh my god, this so I thought peaches was a Georgia thing, right? But then you learn like peaches really come from Persia, you know. Peaches is an import, you know what I'm saying? Like, you learn so many different things. So it's more than just serving food and giving out food and having a garden, and but also like learning where the food comes from. And that's what food ways teach you, is where, like, the history of food and its origins and how it has changed over the years. And even like I was reading in the book Hog and Hominy by Dr. Frederick Douglass Opie, right? He was saying, in terms of like, let's say we all know apple pie and peach cobbler and cherry pie and all that stuff. He was like, that's a European thing, because Europeans, they take the food and they cook it, versus another ethnic group just eat it whole or something like that. So like, you know, things to learn, like, okay, I didn't even know like that this group, they cook with food, and that's why you have the cobblers and the pies and stuff like that, versus another group who's going to do something different with the food. So it's like, it's so much to learn, to not just be a doer, but also think about the processes and the ways in which food is, where did it come from? What's its origins? You know, while all of a sudden, like, I didn't grow up eating tilapia. Right. And it's like, is tilapia like a new fish or something? Like, you know, how is it raised and how is it grown? And, you know, all these different things to consider when you are in the food industry. You know, it's a lot of things like we just eat mindlessly, but actually this food came from places like, so another, I'm rambling now, but I just wanted to say this, like, people were like, you know, it's COVID. I went hiking this morning, so I'm hype, right? I'm hype. I went to Arabian Mountain, and it was such a, I didn't want to go, but it was such a, a nice hike. It was early in the morning, like beautiful, you know. And so, I said to a group, another one of my friend groups, I was like, oh, we should go. It's so cool. You know, we can go in the morning. We can social distance. Somebody has to touch. I didn't touch anybody that I saw. You know, I wanted to hug because I'm a hugger, but I didn't hug anybody today, right? I didn't even really fist bump or elbow bump or anything like that. I was just like, you know, did the head nod and, you know, talk with the eyes or whatever, right? And so, but it was like, they were like, some people are still afraid to go out because they're afraid to get their family and loved ones sick or their friends or, you know, anybody sick. And I'm like, okay, so are we not going to the grocery store? Because we still got to eat, right? So like, maybe you're not seeing friends, but you still are going to the grocery store. And people think like they're like, you know, like, maybe I'm the wild one, right? I'm the wild friend that want to still get out and still be in the world, right? But it's like, if you go to the grocery store, you have touched a lot of people. Because produce travels. It's from the farm. People who are out there all day long touching on that food. The food then goes to transportation. It's distributed to the warehouse. And the warehouse distributes to each individual store. So food is touched a whole lot. And so when people be like, I don't really want to engage with folks. I'm like, you engage with a lot of people when you picked up that peach. Okay. Mm. Like, you know, can't forget like food travels, you know. And so, you know. That's just my little tidbit. When people, it just kills me. Like, you don't even know. You can pick up a fruit and like, oh, I don't really like that one, and put it back. You just touch somebody, you know? Yeah. Touch a bunch of people, actually, you know? So it's just so many things. Like, you know, we all have to be mindful and be careful and cautious, but, you know, you can still do some things.
I guess with every piece of fruit, every piece of food you pick up, not only are you at the kind of the one end of like an ecological process, but also, yeah, like a social network in itself. And I think about, I mean, just today, you know, getting picked up fruit from the grocery store yesterday, and it was sitting out in a bowl. It's been really hot here, and fruit got mushy, and it's like, oh man, like, you know, it's so tempting to just throw that away. But of course, you have to catch yourself and stop and think, not only is this, you know, all the resources that went into physically growing these individual fruits, but then of course also the fact that here on one receiving end of a long network of people working in the orchard and working in the trucks to get
tirelessly
these are truly, pun intended, like also the fruits of people's labor, and my kind of my frivolous attitude towards kind of eating it or throwing it away speaks just like a detachment from that process and a detachment from those people specifically.
It is. Like, I just wrote down a note. I went to the rabbit hole the other night. I didn't go to bed till like 4 o'clock in the morning. It was like 4:30. I was in this rabbit hole of food waste, and I had wrote down something because I was like, I wanted to share it on social media, and it was saying something about that, right? Where is it? Because it was so good. It was like about. It was kind of about that. One, you can take the fruit and you can blend it, right? You can puree it and make it into something else. You can make it a juice. You can make it a smoothie. Because whenever I have fruit that I don't really, it doesn't look as good anymore, because I have some right now. I have some peaches also. You can do other things with them. You can make a preserve, you know, make a soup or a jam or something like that. I don't know where that thing is, because it should be on these couple of pages that I just have, but it talked about like food waste is like one of the bigger waste, because it has more, I think it said it had more greenhouse gas wasted food than 86 times of carbon dioxide. Like a landfill where they're constantly throwing food away is toxic. Those are toxic environments. And so I was listening to, this is what would happen. I was listening to, okay, here we go. Most wasted food ends up in landfills where it generates methane, a greenhouse gas that is up to 86 times more powerful than carbon dioxide. Mm-hmm. And that is from us. Mm-hmm. You know, that is not necessarily from a major corporation. It's not from a prison where there's, you know, thousands of people. This is not from a hospital. This is from us wasting so much food. And it says, do you know who the largest source of wasted food is? It's us, consumers. More than grocery stores and restaurants combined, we waste food. Mm-hmm. And we buy food that we don't get to for whatever reason. We're busy. I don't feel like it today. And we toss it. And I got some peaches that are just not doing good. And I'm like, okay, what can I make with this? I know I'm blending it because I'm not going to just eat it now. It's mushy. But I can cut around the pieces because if you put it in a blender, who cares how, if it looks good or not, you know? So I think when you deal with food waste, how it transcends into your real life is you don't want to waste anything else. Yeah. You don't want to waste time. You don't want to waste resources. You don't want to waste energy. You don't want to buy things that you don't need. Like most people, when they have an event, they cater for more than who's expected just in case, you know. Mm-hmm. Don't do that. Cook for who you know is going to come, like actually come, like, you know, meal plan. You know, these are things that you can do to help with food waste. Meal plan, because if you have a meal and you stick to that plan, then you should have less waste. So there's just different things that we can do. You know, only buy what you need. Like I catch myself in the store. I'm a shopper, right? I'm a shopper. And when I'm out, I'm like, do I love it? You know, like you should just love it, because they say most people only wear 20% of the clothes that they have. So you have a closet full of clothes, but you're only going to wear 20% of those clothes, you know? So, and that's probably the same thing with food. You're going to buy food and probably eat, hopefully you want 20% of your food, but you know what I'm saying? Same thing.
I appreciate in talking about kind of communities that spring up around food and the sharing of food and the discussion of food. Mm-hmm. It's like that is also kind of a way of minimizing waste, because in talking about these things, I mean, even just now as we talked about what to do with the peaches that are getting soggy on my kitchen table, like all the different ways in which I can kind of reclaim them and ensure that they're not actually going to waste, but kind of putting them back to use. And you can only really get that through the kind of sharing of stories around food and the sharing of experiences around food. So I think there's so many different ways in which
You can share it. I just signed up. I was on a pod. I was on a group. It was like a Zoom. I was on a Zoom about. It was this lady. I forget what the conversation was, but it was something about food waste. And I was telling one of the guys about you know, Only Feeds or whatever, and deal with surplus food. And he was like, oh, this app called Olio, and you can put up the things that you don't want. And so people can even share canned goods. You can share box stuff. Like, you know how they got these like libraries, these like book libraries, and these little things. Like I want one of those so bad to be able to put, you know, canned goods and any kind of food, and you can just take as you need, put in, and but also take out, you know? And so that's where we can share food that is like, maybe I might've had some chicken noodle soup in the cabinet. I'm not going to eat it because I just haven't eaten in months. I really don't want it. I just bought it at the time. It worked with something like a can of cream of mushroom, you know, I'm not going to use it. I haven't used it in a while. Share it with somebody else, because like it'd be people in a community. You create this ecosystem. You can create any environment that you want. So if you want to have a community where you share food, then you can maybe put something out like, you know, this is free, take one, and then people feel encouraged to, you know, stock that in front of their house or whatever they don't use or not, you know, may not need, and somebody can take it and like, okay, I did want that. We can do an exchange, a swap, you know, like. Yeah. We can reduce waste. We can do that with clothes. We can do swaps. You know, women do swaps all the time with other ladies, like sister swap. You can just bring the stuff that you don't want, and then we can exchange, and you know. So there's multiple ways that we can reduce waste. You just have to be really innovative. You have to want to build that ecosystem within a community that receives it the same way. And, you know, everybody can do their part, their share.
An ecosystem within a community.
Yeah. And do it.
Thanks for being a part of this ecosystem.
Yes, thanks for having me. This is so cool.
Yeah, we really appreciate this. And again, there's so many different topics that you cover. It's incredible how many different topics food can kind of unite. Food being the center of communities, food is also, I feel like, the center of just like so many different divergent discourses that we have. But when you kind of trace their intersections, you always seem to come back to food and food systems and the way people interact with that food. So, yeah.
Yes.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you for doing this. Thank you for being young folks caring enough about things that, you know, other young folks don't care about. You're going to encourage somebody going to listen to this podcast and be like, man, I want to do that too. I want to help spread the word and get the message out of topics and things that I care about. So I'm glad you guys are doing this. Thank you for, you know, allowing me to be a part of it.
Oh, thank you so much. And you're so welcome anytime. This was really fun.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, you guys have a good weekend.
Thank you, Umi.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.